Hi!
Snuggle up. Bedtime's about to be a dream.
It's good night, bedtime stories. A perfect way to end the day. Good night.
Introducing Nickelodeon's Good Night Bedtime Stories. It's the only podcast where the best part is missing the ending. It's bedtime the Nickelodeon way. Listen to Nickelodeon's Good Night Bedtime Stories wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you want to come cook with us? Vamos! Let's get cooking!
Your preschooler can swing into action with Dora and Boots for a musical adventure in her brand new podcast.
Recipe for Adventure!
It's Dora's Recipe for Adventure, and she's cooking up special treats with all her friends and family. We've got everyone's favorite dishes!
Empanada!
Paleta!
We're cooking up a family adventure, and Dora has the perfect recipe! Listen to Dora's Recipe for Adventure wherever you get your podcasts.
A Nickelodeon original podcast.
Want more Avatar Braving the Elements?
Subscribe to Avatar Braving the Elements Premium on Apple Podcasts for bonus episodes and early access.
Subscribe today.
Hello, friends, benders, and non-benders alike. Welcome to Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's podcast about all things Avatarverse. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco. And Varney, this week we have a very, very special guest with us to walk through the Puppet Master.
Indeed we do, my friend. In fact, you could almost call him the Puppet Master of the Puppet Master. If everything about that didn't sound ominous and wrong, which it does.
You know, yes, it really does, but yeah. I get where you're going, but he's a massive part of what makes this episode of Avatar The Last Airbender so amazing because he directed it.
Otherwise known as Puppet Mastered it.
No, yes, sir.
Still not good. Still not great. You know what? Let's distract from my awkwardness by just welcoming in the amazing Joaquim Dos Santos.
Joaquim, welcome to the show. What's
How's
up? Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for taking the time out. Busiest director in showbiz. That's how I feel about you right now.
Very busy guy. I recently got to see Joaquim recently in Ohio when we were both speaking at Ohio State University. The Ohio State University.
The Ohio State.
All the Buckeyes out.
A lot of robots rolling around in Ohio. Did you notice that? There was a lot of delivery robots.
They're really next level out there in Columbus.
Yeah, I'm missing out. And I realize that I definitely quickly anthropomorphize every robot. Like I am the tech industry's dream, because if I see like a self-driving car in San Francisco, whether or not it's doing what it's supposed to do, I'm like, oh, hello to you, buddy. Like, are you driving?
It's got a little soul.
Are you a driver? Yeah.
It's talking to the robots.
Terrible. Yes. And then they name them. Again, they've made them for me. I'm like, is your name Dexter? Are you Dexter? as like it gets in the way of a fire truck. Anyway, this is the thing. Joaquim, you and I did get to work together. We got to do panels together during Korra. I already thought of you as a certifiable genius. But here's the thing, and I am upset about this. Why did you have to go ahead and just gild the lily by co-directing Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse? You know what I mean?
Know.
It's like maybe the best animated movie I've ever seen. It's like heart-crushingly gorgeous to look at. It feels innovative and fresh in a way that to me kind of signifies like a new era of animation style. I mean, the first movie did that as well, but I don't know. Spider-Verse is just across, it's ramping it way up. Bonzer. But like, how was it? You know what I mean? That's a very broad question, but like, how was it?
Amazing. It's awesome to be on the other side of it. It was 5 years of my life. You know, you look at it in those terms and you're like, oh, my son was a very different being when I started that film. And now he's we're hanging and having conversations and he's my roommate now. If I'm being honest, like the crew that we all were on Avatar and Korra, like we were sort of waiting for this moment in time. I think we were ahead of the curve in terms of who animation was playing to.
Right.
It feels to me like features sort of caught up with a lot of the the ground that was paved.
You guys might have paved the way. You might say you guys might have paved the way maybe, in that situation.
Maybe.
You puppet bastard the entire industry of animation.
It was a plan the whole time.
I got it. I'm really trying to work in puppet master.
I had a lot of conversation with him about the movie when we were in Ohio. And can I just say for all the Spider-Man fans, that ending though, Joaquin, that ending, are you serious? Come on.
That's Hollywood rule number one. You leave him wanting more, baby.
Got to leave him wanting more. I know. Oh, so good.
Empire Strikes Back. That was sort of the take there.
I get it.
But we definitely, you know, as we were testing the film, and we talked about this a little bit, Dante, like I was noticing people were like looking at their watches, like, this thing better start wrapping it up. Like, what is going on? How's this going to happen? And it doesn't. Really.
It doesn't. That's your answer, people looking at your watches. It doesn't. Love it. Okay, so I love that you came in on the Jet episode like as an appreciator and then fan of the show. It's so fun hearing fans talk about the show in terms of finding it to just get excited to watch it, and then hearing about somebody who'd never seen it and watched it and was like, oh, I'm going to work on that show. Like,
oh,
that
my
is
gosh.
Other level, and it's so satisfying. Well, we'd love to know if you have like sort of favorite characters that are more kind of peripheral, like a Jet. Don't get mad at me, Jet haters. I'm not saying he's like super peripheral, but he's not a Qatar. He's not an Aang. He's not. And do you have like a lesser represented character that you love? And then do you have like a kind of a personal favorite that you love from kind of Team Avatar or from the sort of Azula Iroh of it all?
I mean, Jet is awesome. I really fell in love with Smellerbee.
Smellerbee's great.
That whole squad, they were designed beautifully. I either like a character that's like at 10 or a character that's really understated and sort of like, you know, is awesome, but doesn't have to say it all the time. If I'm talking like Team Avatar, it's Sokka. He's the loudest one. He's the one that's like putting it out there and just outrageous at all times. And how can you like not love the Water Tribe moment? It's the best. But Smellerbee was like super near and dear to my heart. And that's a character that I will sketch all the time whenever I have free time.
It's an interesting looking character.
Yeah.
And Smellerbee, how they do her story at the end.
Yeah.
Like when they talk and everything. And it reminds me of Anybody's from West Side Story.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. That makes sense. Smellerbee is just very beloved. And Smellerbee has also been like, you know, sort of appreciated and loved in the sort of non-binary world too, for being representative. Yeah. We love Smellerbee. We've had some good chats about Smellerbee. I could not be more surprised and delighted that is something that you sketch Smellerbee. That just makes me so happy. Like Smellerbee's alive and well, everybody. Don't worry. Smellerbee's getting sketched by Joaquin.
Still living on.
The Freedom Fighters live on.
Fantastic.
One day, we'll drive the Fire Nation out of here for good and free that town.
That's so brave.
Yeah, nothing's braver than a guy in a treehouse.
Okay, so thinking back on your Avatar days, do you remember any episodes in particular? Have a favorite episode that you can recall?
I remember, and again, you know, we were talking about this. They all sort of like blend together. It's like one long episode that we all worked on together.
It's a dream of a past life we had.
That's right. I do remember being really excited about the scale of the finale, the two-part finale, and in particular the airship battle stuff, because I was, you know, there wasn't a ton of well-done CG 2D animated stuff at the time, and Mike and Brian were like, we're going for it. We're just going to go for these big airships and like have them crash into each other, which is like a huge no-no in terms of like production and... I remember we pitched out the finale, and it was originally one episode. We pitched it out to all the execs, and they were like, this is huge. I think this is two episodes. And we were like, oh my God. All right. Thank the Lord. There's no way this was going to be one episode. We had no hope.
This is a movie. This is a movie, you guys.
It was sort of a standalone thing. But I do remember really being fond of how small and intimate the Zuko and Azula stuff was and how beautifully that played against how big and bombastic and insane all the airship battle stuff was. So from like a director's perspective, being able to ride those two lines, it was like, you couldn't ask for more.
Just to like sort of drill down on a tiny bit. Shout out to the drill, by the way. Also an amazing invention of the Fire Nation.
Thank you.
What makes
good
it
folks
a no-no?
In the Fire Nation.
Yeah, good folks in the Fire Nation. What makes it, is it a production no-no because it's like, that is just such an amount of complicated work to have like that level of sort of like destruction happening? Like,
I think so, yeah. I mean, especially at the time, you had 2D shows, you know, traditionally animated shows, then you had CG shows. And most of the time when those two things blended, it didn't have like the best results, unless it was some like really high-end curated like anime or something like that.
Yeah.
Like Ghost in the Shell did it really well. It didn't really happen very much, at least at like a decent level for series work. And then it was them interacting with each other. Like essentially, you know, there's no destruction that can happen on the CG model. So when they crash into each other, you need like traditional effects to cover up where they're colliding, because all that's happening is those two models are just intersecting with each other.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you had no effects on top of them, it would just look like, oh, they're merging in some weird way.
When we think of like old He-Man episodes, you see that whatever it is, you see it, they cut back to a lot. You're like, you know, in your mind, that's just the same drawing. They're
that's right.
Back to doing something in front of another thing. And like, yeah, that's the same exact drawing. Doing
that's right.
Whatever.
But the ambition of like, there's a scene where like Sokka, I think, like takes the wheel and like spins it, and then it just starts this whole cascading. Like, I mean, that was pitched out in storyboards, you know, in back in the days where you would pitch out like on a giant wall, and we sort of had to just lock hands and go like, I think we're going to just do this. Like,
are
and
we drawing?
See
all
what
of
happens. Yeah.
This is 24 frames a second,
I'm not
or how many
draw
frames,
this
is, how
this
many
is the,
frames are we doing?
That's right.
Use this. Right. Use this. I'm not going to draw this again.
So it was a big to do, and it was like a kind of a risk, kind of a leap of faith, kind of we just had to believe that it was going to work.
And the fans love it. And I brought it up in a few episodes, but literally when I'm at cons and I talk to fans, a question I get asked a lot and I hear them talking about is, where were you when the finale hit, when Souls in Common hit? Where do you remember where you were? And they all talk about where they were at that time. The OG fans that were kids during that time, they all can recall where they were when they saw that episode. And I love a community being able to have a touchstone like that.
Yeah. And again, I interact with a lot of artists that are coming into the industry that Avatar was their show when they were kids. And for them, it was cool that essentially like the Zuko and Azula moment played just over score, over Jeremy's score.
Yeah.
But that, again, that was like a thing that wasn't really happening in animation at that time. It felt very cinematic. It felt heavier than most shows at the time. So it had a profound sort of stamp on a lot of people that were watching it at the time, because they hadn't seen it.
And who ended up making shows afterwards, like you were saying about Paving
the Way.
Right. I mean, that's so many people cite Avatar as a huge inspiration to them, and with some of the like super popular also anime, but not necessarily even that inspired by Japanese stuff, like just people who are like, this is a super American show and Avatar was my guide.
It threaded this needle. You know, it was sort of like the gateway into anime, but also into film for a lot of people, which I
totally
think is very cool.
Totally.
Good work, Toph. Time to take control of the ship. Take the wheel.
That's a great idea. Let the blind girl steer the giant airship.
I was talking to Suki.
That would make a lot more sense.
Let's get into our three questions that we ask all our guests.
Okay.
Yeah? We think Barney?
Yeah.
Okay.
Favorite hybrid animals. We talked about the platypus bear. I don't know if that's high on your list, but do you have a hybrid animal or two that you all feel a sort of, maybe not a Smellerby level affection for, but somebody that you love to draw or something that you just love the concept of?
Well, I will say that the platypus bear is high on the list.
Nice.
Just because it was like the first thing I remember drawing from Avatar. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the first episode that I worked on was the zoo episode. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Essentially like Aang builds that zoo.
Yeah. I think that's the story of Aang inside Tales of Ba Sing Se, right? I think that's the episode.
I think it is.
That's the little guy that lives inside the big,
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Oh, so you had animals galore.
I mean, that was my first episode. Yeah. That was Ethan Spalding directing, and I came in and they were like, all right, here's this scene with like a million animals.
Yeah. All those sad animals that Aang had to kind of rescue.
Where's your hubris now?
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, platypus bear is probably it.
I love it. When he lays that egg, it's one of the first. When it lays the egg, that is like a very laugh out loud moment.
Whoa there!
Lunch.
Okay, so our second question is, in the Avatarverse, who do you ship? As in relationships, what characters do you ship together?
No pressure.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big one. Can I get a little esoteric here for a minute?
And yeah, 100%, just say that, like,
you know, we make these things just trying to make like cool stories almost for ourselves and stuff that we would be interested in. And then as soon as it goes like out into the world, I've realized that for me to sort of like imply whatever rules I might have had in my head, whatever canon was in my head, it's no longer ours.
It's no longer.
It belongs to the people. So for me to even like intimate at what I think I
what did you root like, for though? For you, Joaquin, even canon or not canon?
I mean, I was, you know, Sokka and Suki to me felt like the one that I wanted to see like the
great
the coolest kids ever.
You're great.
Yeah.
Great.
Joni and Chachi.
There you go. Yeah. So for the five people that understood that reference.
It's a Happy Days reference, you guys. If you don't know, go watch Happy Days, Joni and Chachi.
Listen, all due respect to Happy Days. You might not need to watch Happy Days. It's cool, guys. It's cool. No pressure. There's a lot of great stuff.
I mean, there was a shark jumping moment that sort of set the pace.
Great. That is true. Fonzie, for sure.
Everyone's heard jump the shark. That's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
I think he's gone. We did it!
And then if you, Joaquin, were a bender, what kind would you be?
Ooh.
Yes.
That's a tough one.
What nation are we representing? Are we doing Earth Kingdom? Are we doing?
I mean, listen, you want to call yourself an
Water
Avatar.
Tribe? I'm very comfortable with that. Fire Nation.
No, I'm probably Water Tribe.
I felt it. I can feel it. Talk about Sokka so much.
We love Sokka. Water Tribe.
Yeah, probably Water Tribe.
Nice people in the Water Tribe. Nice.
And you know, I am a sweater, so I feel like I could use that to my advantage.
Yes.
Just get a little exercise exploited. Going. You don't need a pool of water or anything.
Absolutely.
Especially in this episode, Katara can find water everywhere.
That's right. I didn't realize it at the time, but there was so much setup happening there that was leading us to the
universe. Oh, yeah.
So much.
Oh, it's massive. It's amazing. And it's certainly a skill that gets spoken of, I'm going to say in hushed tones in the Avatarverse, but it's very controversial. People talk about how it's almost like loving Azula. It's like people sort of enjoy leaning in. We just did an episode recently with somebody who kind of leans in and is like, I think bloodbending's pretty cool. It's like kind of that same Azula vibe where it's like,
and I'm like, shut your mouth.
Azula's amazing. What are you going to say? What are you going to say? Like, it's,
you just got to like accept it.
Yeah.
It's too much power. It's too much power.
The question about like nothing being good or bad, which Dante, I know you love talking about a lot too, but it being what the person who's doing it is doing with it, that's very much a huge part of people talking about this episode. Let's lift the curtain on the Puppet Master, shall we?
But Varna, before we do, I think we might want to revisit the last episode of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Fair.
So we can remind everyone where we're at and also... because I'm curious to see how it plays out, Varney. So can you come up with another haiku to describe the last Avatar episode we covered, which was The Runaway?
The Runaway. Okay, let's say to trick the trickster means one must take their own risks. Will Hawkeye return? That's right. A little twist there.
We don't know if hockey's going to return.
What happened to hockey? Got to remember what happened to hockey.
I like hockey. And then I think of the other word, like actually the game of hockey. It's just,
it's true. It's true that you kind of need to see the hawk in front of you or the word hockey to not think about like pucks.
Once you perfect this technique, you can control anything or anyone.
But to reach inside someone and control them? I don't know if I want that kind of power.
The choice is not yours. The power exists. And it's your duty to use the gifts you've been given to win this war.
Oh, she's so eerie, that Hama. In this eerie episode in which we learn about the questionable skill of bloodbending is a really popular episode for all the fans out there. It's written by our friend Tim Hendrick and Joaquin. Do you have any specific memories about making The Puppet Master? Is it true that the alternate title for this episode was The Dark Side of the Moon?
Oh, I mean, that's news to me, but I do like
that's
that.
Pretty cool, though.
I do like that tidbit. That's a deep cut if that's true. I wouldn't be surprised. I know that Tim is a huge music fan.
I think I heard that there was maybe someone played The Dark Side of the Moon during the sort of animatics phase or something, which is kind of amazing.
I believe that happened. There was a lot that happened in the writer's room that we were not privy to on the outside. Yeah.
So to start, you brought it up, Dante. We need to give big props to this episode for really setting that tone immediately. Even just looking at the title card, before we can see anything else, we get this really creepy, that tinkly music box kind of music that it's like a great shorthand that we all kind of understand for like, get ready for something creepy to happen, right? And sure enough, right, we start out at night with this nearly full moon. Shout out to Princess Yue, of course. And this lingering establishing shot. And I'm only mentioning how long it is because it truly enhances that eerie vibe. I mean, you guys hang on that opening shot like nothing else I've ever seen in Avatar.
Again, that was one of the things that we related on. It's, you know, when I first got in the industry, it might have been, again, like a kid working with adults and the adults sort of saying like, we just don't hang on shots that long in animated fare. But we were like, can we just keep going? Oh, like, let's so just keep good. Cranking. It just felt right to
it's
do.
It's great. It's so noticeable. We don't take this much time ever talking about just like the established. I mean, when do we talk about the title card, Dante? Never. But it's all there. It's just a very different episode. So then we're taken to a sleeping Appa. We have Team Avatar sitting around the fire in the forest where Sokka's telling them this ghost story about the apparently haunted blade of Wing Fun. Unfortunately, it doesn't really seem like the rest of the gang is necessarily feeling it too much. Toph has sort of decided like, well, based on this, I guess Southern Water Tribe stories are just they're not scary and they're lame. But Katara says she is a good one and it's very close to home because it happened to their mom, which is another kind of point where you're like, oh, mom. Like we never hear, you know, we don't usually talk about mom. And
some real talk now.
And
it's
that
just
this
real
is
talk,
kind of a
Katara,
horror story.
Let's talk some real
like,
talk.
Exactly. Like, where's this going to go? And as Katara tells it, when Kaya, their mom, was a girl, this snowstorm came and buried their village. And Kaya's friend Nini went missing. And then she appeared before Kaya, blue and frozen, trying to get warm. Except that Nini was never actually found. Okay? So
all these spooky stories.
Yeah. Her empty house still sent. Now I'm just doing it. Now I'm just trying to recreate it. And even though the empty house still sometimes sends smoke through the chimney, it's a pretty good story. Oh, but Toph takes it to the next level by claiming that she can suddenly hear people under the mountain screaming. And then after Toph says the screaming stops, this mysterious old woman suddenly appears and officially wins the prize for most effective scare so far.
Ah!
Everybody, we're scared. Team Avatar scared. We're scared. She's maybe a little scared.
I'm scared. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I hate scary movies. I don't like them. Okay. Wow. I don't go to scary movies. I don't like them. I get scared. I did not like doing the scary stories around the fire. I'm Filipino. These stories got scary.
Yeah.
Things happen. People, ghosts, all this stuff happening.
Yeah.
No. I'm out.
Bring it.
It reminded me of having sleepovers and doing like Ouija board
stuff heck
when I was
yeah.
a kid. And
no,
like,
no, I did Ouija board one time. Never again. Never again.
You would work yourself up into a crazy lather where like everybody by the end is like, oh my God, it spelled, you know, my grandma's name. It's my grandma.
No, that thing is horrible.
And then growing up here in the valley, I will say we had this thing called Gravity Hill. I don't know if this is like, this happens like all over the states and every Gravity state has a Gravity Hill. But basically, you'd park your car, and it was a hill that clearly went up. But if you left your car in neutral, you would roll uphill.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And then the big like trick you would do is you'd put like baby powder on the bumper, and then you would see that there were little kids' hands that were pushed into the baby powder because there was a massive accident.
No.
That like with like a bus that killed a bunch of kids. That was the legend that we were told.
No.
The car rolling uphill thing is, yeah, there's a place in Sedona like that, but I don't know if there are that many places
handprints
like
on
that.
Is there people's handprints on your bumper?
I don't remember that
kids
at all.
Pushing your
I
car?
Do not remember tiny child fingerprints and baby powder. That's terrifying.
You'd always have one person in the car that wasn't in on the gag, and everybody would be waiting on the side of the road. So then when you did it, everybody would put their little baby fingers on the bumper.
Baby? Strong babies pushing cars?
Your babies.
That's right.
I don't want no baby paws, little puppy paws pushing my car. I don't want that.
But it had that vibe, those stories. I remember telling those stories.
Absolutely. I love how resentful you are about covering this episode, Dante. It's very fun. It's very fun that you're like, I don't appreciate this.
All right.
Why don't you come back there for some spiced tea and warm beds?
Yes, please.
The woman says her name is Hama. She's scary as heck, you guys. She's super pale. And she's actually out there to invite them to her inn. Heck no. But they go where they can warm up and they can sleep in real beds. They join her there, and she warns them that people have been disappearing in the forest.
When the moon turns full, people walk in and they don't come out. Who wants more tea?
But she reassures them that they'll be safe in the inn, and everyone goes to bed. Well, Sokka has a few nervous moments, but then passes out for some classic Sokka snoring and drooling. The next morning, Hama takes them to go shopping. And Aang and Sokka overhear two vendors talking about how their deliveries are getting messed up by the risk of traveling through the forest during the full moon, since apparently delivery boys have been keep disappearing during the full moon. Aang and Sokka think maybe this is a spirit world situation where an unhappy spirit may be acting out because of an environmental problem. Maybe Aang can help. Hama then sends the gang back to the inn with their supplies while she goes off to run some unnamed errands. Sokka's a bit creeped out by Hama. All of us are, for sure.
We all really are.
But she's creepy as heck. But not Katara. Katara's unbothered. Katara kind of actually likes her. I don't know. For her, Hama's a kind old woman who calls up memories of Gran-Gran. But Sokka decides to poke around and see if anything's amiss. The rest of the team follows as he snoops around, peeking into rooms and cabinets until they come across some creepy marionette puppets. But that doesn't mean anything, right? Puppets are gone. Like, I'm so gone. We're gone. She left us alone. Let's get out of here. Like, thanks for the night's rest, old lady.
The puppets are great because I forgot that they don't come back. Like, it's not like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, they come back, if you know what I mean. Foreshadow report.
Life-size puppets.
The idea puppets. That they're just in there and then that's it. And it's like, no, she just has those very creepy marionette puppets.
No.
No big deal. Is extremely satisfying.
And Sokka's reaction to the puppets is amazing. Like he like backs up against the wall and he's got his sword out and he's ready to do battle. So they finally end up at the top floor of the inn where Sokka finds a locked door, and through the keyhole, Sokka can see the room only contains a chest. And when Toph wonders if it's full of treasure, that's all Sokka needs to justify Jimmy rigging the lock with his sword to get the door open. The chest is also locked, but Toph uses her meteor bracelet to make a kind of skeleton key. Really, is there anything Toph can't do?
I know.
So why didn't you do that for the first door? What are you doing?
You don't ask Sokka, these many questions, okay?
Sokka had it covered. He did not need anybody coming in on his turf. He was going
to
get that door.
Good with that sword. He got that new sword. He's using it for all kinds of things. Shout out to his sword man, Swordmaster Sokka.
Sokka, what are you doing? You're breaking into a private room.
I have to see what's in there.
As they unlock and are about to open it, we hear Hama behind them. And she tells them that she's going to show them what's inside the chest. And after a few tense seconds, worthy of any great horror movie,
yes,
she shows them.
An old comb?
It's my greatest treasure. It's the last thing I own from growing up in the Southern Water Tribe.
And so as it turns out, Hama overheard them talking at the camp. And so she was excited to cook a huge feast and tell Katara and Sokka that she is a fellow Water Tribe member.
Yeah.
Katara's thrilled. I mean, this was huge news. I think that's huge. The other thing is that, like, this is a massive moment in the universe of Avatar.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, again, the lens sort of goes both ways.
But it's Hama. It
oh, for God's sake. Yes, it is Hama.
It's like,
yes.
Hama's like, I'm your grandma. Like, I don't care. I don't like you. Dante.
So Katara's thrilled, unlike Dante. And everyone feels guilty for sneaking around. And later that evening, Hama has another surprise waiting for them, that she is a waterbender. Which is also cool news.
That's huge news. That's cool. That's cool.
I remember reading this and being like kind of surprised that the writers were telling this sort of big reveal in the framework of a horror movie, essentially.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
It's complex. Absolutely.
A lot of backstory. There's so much backstory on this Hama character here.
So she's the last one since firebenders wiped them all out. And we see what happened to Hama as she tells her tale over 60 years ago when the raids began. And we see the Southern Water Tribe. And over, the Fire Nation attacked the Southern Water Tribe and kidnapped the waterbenders. And pretty soon, Hama was all that was left. And she was taken to the Fire Nation. And that's heavy.
That's heavy stuff.
It's so heavy, especially since, I'm glad you said that, because... like, it's especially haunting since it really was only a couple of episodes that we see in the past Ozai describing to Roku his desire to spread the good life of the Fire Nation. Like, we're enjoying so much. Why don't we just spread the love around to the whole world? We know. Yes, Dante, I know. There are some good people in the Fire Nation.
Defend all the Fire Nation people.
Do not do it.
Do
not do it right now.
Things happen.
So it's definitely even more, to me, that's more, it's like more offensive because we just saw, you know, it's so fresh in our minds that Ozai's like, no, listen, we got so much to give. Let's like, I want to give everyone this quality of life. Right. Give me a break. Okay.
Some
we don't get
drunk on
story.
Power. Some people get drunk on power. I don't know.
Yes, they do. And
I don't know what's happening.
And it could happen in any tribe. It did happen in the Fire Nation, but whatever.
Great granddad is wilding out. Great granddad's doing too much. Let's be honest.
So we can't even hear the whole story because Hama becomes too upset, will not talk about it anymore. But Hama does want to teach Katara about her Southern Water Tribe heritage. Katara, of course, is incredibly honored. Here she's having this amazing connection with this fellow Water Tribe waterbender. And so she's honored. And the two ladies are talking about the limits of the parts of the world with less water in them as they're out on this walk together. Like when they were in the desert, Katara mentions, like, that's incredibly challenging when there's just nothing to use. But Hama tells Katara she needs to be able to use whatever water is there to the greatest effect. And, you know, Hama's very proud of Katara when she says, like, well, actually, yes, I recently figured out how to use my own sweat as a resource. But Hama's like, it goes a little deeper than that. For example, hey, there's moisture in the air around you, right? And the scene ends with Hama encouraging Katara to keep an open mind because there's water in places you never even think about. Foreshadow report. That can't mean anything good. It can't mean anything.
At this point, we're like, fully aware that creepy stuff is happening, right?
For sure.
I'm out.
For sure.
I'm gone. I'm no longer messing with Hama. Hama's gone. Hama, I'm gone.
Dante, I hope you finished this. I hope this wasn't a too scary, didn't watch kind of a situation.
I liked it, but I just hate horror movies, and this was very horror.
Yeah.
I will say that I do remember specifically Lauren Montgomery. She boarded this sequence where she draws the water out of the plants and then slices the rock into like four pieces. Yes. And I remember going like, this is bad. Like the water can be almost more evil than fire. Like it can do more damage.
Very bad.
That was incredible.
Meanwhile, Toph, Sokka, and Aang search for the possible spirit causing the disappearances, but they're not coming up with much. It's a beautiful place, but no obvious signs of environmental distress. So Toph wonders if the moon spirit just turned mean, which Sokka gets a little defensive about. That was just hilarious.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Good for you, Sokka.
He's sticking up for his lady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just then, a passing traveler happens along, and Aang tries to find out more about this mysterious spirit. He says there's only one person who lived to tell the tale of meeting the spirit, Old Man Ding. Then we head back to Katara and Hama, and they're walking through a gorgeous field of fire lilies, the same field as we saw in that creepy opening shot. As we talk about how water exists in plants and Katara shouts out the swamp monster, Hama proceeds to suck out the water of the lilies to slice apart the boulders. Mm-hmm. Katara's loving it, except for the part where all those lilies die.
Yeah.
Except for that part, you know. But Hama brushes off as necessary collateral damage to survive as a waterbender in the Fire Nation, which
It makes sense, guys.
You know,
That's how they get you. It's a little, it's like indoctrination. She really does that sort of cultish indoctrination thing where it's like, you can use your sweat. You can use your this. What else were we supposed to do? Like, it makes sense. And that's how you're sort of going down the road with her.
And I ain't going down no road with Hama. I don't care anything. I'm not going down
no road with her. Tell him.
I don't know what you're doing, Katara. I'm not going down that road with Hama for nothing.
No.
Yet, since it's a full moon, Hama promises to show Katara the ultimate technique of water bending. Will it be dangerous since people have been disappearing during full moons? Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. Did that sound like foreboding? Should I say it twice?
That's what you do. Yeah, you say it twice. That's how you know something's up. You know it's not good if you say it twice. That was very good.
We know at this point we're getting that it's definitely not good.
Looking for a way to safeguard your heirlooms but love a little mystery? Then you need a Hama brand keepsake box. Available in several styles and sizes, Hama brand keepsake boxes preserve your mementos and leave prying eyes guessing. Like this one. It looks like an ordinary creepy marionette, but hidden inside its dead wooden eye is a small ball, and inside that small ball is a tiny box that can fit up to one gem. Or this one. It looks like an ordinary basket, but one of the reeds of the basket is hollow and can hold up to 2 coins. Hama brand keepsake boxes. I guess they only really hold small stuff. Available to order by rotary phone only. Most restrictions apply.
Sokka, Toph, and Aang find Old Man Ding, which, by the way, was like one of our favorite characters in The Office for a while, just because we like going like, I'm Old Man Ding, and doing the voice to each other.
Old Man Ding.
I get it.
He doesn't appreciate being called old, by the way. The team decided to help him board up his place as they ask him about what happened to him. And it's not that he was scooped up by a spirit. It's more like he felt like he was possessed, and he couldn't stop himself from walking up towards the mountain. Which, you know, it's sort of like, I don't know, that weird liminal space when you're not quite awake, you're not quite asleep, you're in that weird, I can't control my body. It's happened to me a couple times. It's very scary.
No, thank you.
Very scary. You got bloodbended, Joaquin.
I got bloodbended.
That's what was happening.
That was it.
I know.
That was it. Just before he walked into the cave of the mountain, the sun came up and was able to break the spell, and he was able to run away. They realize that what Toph heard that night at the camp was the real thing. There are people under the mountain, and they have to help them. So elsewhere in the forest, Hama draws on the power of the moon as Katara watches. And then we cut back to Toph, Sokka, and Aang, who find the door leading into the mountain. And the tunnels lead them to a bunch of people that are shackled to the walls. Mm. And they tell the gang—
What are they doing there?
Dude, I don't know. We were creeped out boarding it.
It was creepy going there. Like, what's happening?
You know what it reminded me of? Well, like when I was a kid, I remember vividly watching both Ridley Scott's Alien and
totally Aliens.
Jim Cameron's Aliens. Too. And when the people were like against, we were trying to revoke that
you
mojo.
Did it.
And you did.
You did it. I can't tell you how often in any situation I lean on the comedy of, please. Kill me.
It's like the worst best line ever, right? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Whenever you're in a strange place or a strange party, don't know anybody, you have a moment thought, am I going to end up chained to a wall
in a pod
somewhere in one
That's
of these
covered
in
mucus?
Yeah.
This is how it's going to all end.
So this group of people who are creepily tethered to the wall, tell the gang that it was a witch that did this to them and not a spirit. Mm. When they realize it's Hama, Sokka and Aang race out to stop her while Toph sets the prisoners free. And I will say, I have to say that the moment that Sokka goes, Hama, Lauren boarded this absolutely crazy like pose of him going like, Hama! And he gets, and that was another one that we like, we gave her the business on that one.
Of course, like Hama. As soon as they said witch, everyone in the room, Hama!
Hama!
Hama! It was like, there was not even like, you think? There was nothing. There's no second guessing. It was like, that's Hama. I know it. It's Hama.
So Hama's telling Katara about these horrible conditions of the prison that she was in with no water, anywhere to use, to keep waterbenders from using it. But Hama sensed the full moon giving her hope. It was the rats who first inspired her to use the water inside their bodies to control them.
Eerie. Which,
classic eerie. Testing eerie. On rats.
What is this? This is
She's a scientist.
Wild.
She is
this
a scientist.
This is wild. In and of itself, bloodbending rats is wild.
But again, you like... you're sympathetic. She's a prisoner. Yeah. She's doing what she has to
survive.
Like,
I am very absolutely. Sympathetic. I am very sympathetic. And very spooky. And it's very weird. It's strange.
So she uses the blood inside their bodies to control them, otherwise known as bloodbending. And Katara is very disturbed by this revelation and doesn't necessarily think that it's her duty to use waterbending in this way. But Hama insists.
And of course, now Katara realizes that... Yes, Hama is the one who's been making people disappear. And Hama is totally remorseless. And moreover, she expects Katara to do the same. Katara refuses. And Hama shows her just how awful bloodbending can truly be, right? She turns Katara into her puppet, flinging her this way and that. It is really horrifying. It seems like Katara is completely under Hama's control. But y'all, have you met Katara? Okay. We see that grass under her hands turn black as she pulls water from it, rising up to face Hama. The two fight, and as Sokka and Aang approach, Katara is definitely the one in control here. So it feels like, oh, this is good. But then Hama uses Sokka and Aang to attack Katara, who has to then fight them both off. Somehow one of the things that gets me the most in the scene, by the way, like I'm laughing now, but it makes me cry. Is when Katara apologizes to Aang as this is all happening, and he just goes, "It's okay.
It's okay. Like, it's the best."
It kills me. I was like, it was the thing where I was so engrossed that I didn't realize why my cheeks were wet when that happened. But all of a sudden, I was like, "Oh, it's so sweet that like, I don't know. It's great." I'm not saying it's a Katang moment, Dante. Don't freak out.
No, I'm not saying that. But it's a funny moment. I'm still scared of Hama and everything she's doing. She's so gangster. She ends up with making Sokka like gonna stab.
Yeah, gonna they're set against each
other. She's like, right. I'm gonna send them together. Like, oh, your friends are gonna kill. I'm gonna just kill your friends. Yeah. Then. Like,
it's
what
a nightmare.
Are we
it's
talking about?
A nightmare. This is almost about to happen. The sword is outstretched. It's about to like hurt Aang. Katara, this is what you gotta do. This is what you gotta do. It doesn't matter if you wanna do it. The only thing you can do, because you can't do it to your friends, is bloodbend Hama. And she forces her to the ground. Just as the villagers are arriving, they take Hama away. But Hama kind of gets the last word because she feels she has succeeded in turning Katara into a bloodbender.
Ending,
it's like, I did my job.
Joaquin,
this is it's everything I wanted. We fade to white over Katara's sobs. Oh, Joaquin.
Horrible.
It
I'm sorry. On.
Katara
the ending,
sobbing.
I mean... This is like not an ending. This is an ending. This is like,
and now you're cursed. With
but is
ending.
It is it a beginning for Katara? I think that's the cool thing that we sort of got to ask. She was sort of like bestowed this curse.
Yeah.
That
she wasn't happy with it.
She wasn't like happy it. With it. I will say that I very much like episodes, and this is my weird, cruel storytelling sensibilities that don't. They not every episode has to have a happy ending. And I think that was one of, again.
Says the man
was,
who directed Spider-Verse,
exactly.
Spider-Man 2.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
There's a theme here.
Yes.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing.
What I do love is that it sort of like delivers this extra bit of agency to Katara as a character. Like, what
absolutely.
Is she going to do
totally.
With this power now?
Absolutely.
It's really her decision.
Yes. It's
a different level. And you know, when they start, this is really the bloodbending episode, when they start talking about
water, you know, because we don't ever think of our blood as water.
Right.
Right. It's just a part of us. And then you start thinking of it as water.
Right.
It reminded me of another old school reference for people. No one's going to get this. There's a movie called Ice Pirates.
Oh, you man. Remember
Ice Pirates?
I saw that in the drive-in.
Yes. Ice Pirates. And there's no love water it. In the plant. And it's all about these pirates
That's
doing
right.
this ice. And then when people died, they would put this machine on them and take the
and
water
take
out of
the
them.
Take the water out of them. That's right. Yeah. That's totally right. I will say one of the things that I loved about Avatar, just conceptually, and it's something that both Mike and Brian always drove home when we were doing storyboards and pitching out stuff, is that there was like a sort of pseudoscience to the way that everything worked.
Yes.
So, you know, I was sort of in the headspace of like, okay, earthbenders have this abundance of stuff and we will just animate rocks flying up and stuff. And I remember Brian specifically saying like, yes. Hey, we have to like preserve the mass that's there. Like it has to go away.
Yes.
They got to run out eventually. And I was like, isn't this like a cartoon? He's like, no, man, we got to like have the rules or else the
so
whole
good.
Thing crumbles.
It's 100%. So good. He reiterates 100%. That on this show a lot. And you really, when you keep that, when you're walking around with that information in your head and you're being reminded of it and you're watching the show, you really do connect with how important that truly is in world bending and in establishing rules. And that when you see something, you don't necessarily know, like, at the jump, like why something isn't working for you when you're watching right. something that's in a created world. But it's stuff like that. It's stuff like that where you don't see it, but there's something that feels uncanny, or there's something that feels off, or there's something that just feels sloppy.
Yeah.
And that's the precision of those decisions is what makes this such a worthwhile like show to talk about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or Katara even saying that her powers were sort of useless in the desert. Like the fact that there was a limit on that is cool.
Absolutely.
But once Hama pulls the water out of the air, I mean,
it makes then like water bending scary
so
nails.
OP. It's so overpowered. All
claws.
Of a sudden, like, you get water out of the air, you're good.
Well, especially if you're in like Hawaii, forget about it. It's like
it's
you got
moisture
everything you
everywhere.
Everything
you're in Florida, humidity,
yeah.
It's over. It's over. I mean, Arizona, you might be hurting in Arizona. You know,
we get hurt in Arizona.
Listen,
we're going to be, I'll tell you what. I hate to say it, but the version of that in Arizona is like the fire lilies. It's like you're just pulling it out of all the cacti and the succulents, and then they're just like shriveling up. But there is some really cool stuff in terms of, we talked about the history. We talked about, you know, this kind of laying ground backwards for origin story stuff. And there's some really cool little moments in there. Like in Hama's flashback, we see that the Fire Nation ship that Aang and Katara venture into at the very beginning of the series, when you're meeting everybody for the first time, we get to see it get uprooted by the Southern Waterbenders.
Right.
And those kinds of moments, again, that's the payback, then the payoff
so great.
Of that world building. That's so smart. It's so smart. And then just in case people don't remember where it's from and it sort of rings a bell, you're like, why? Okay, wait, we already know that somehow Aang knows that he hates stewed sea prunes. And that's because in Batu of the Water Tribe, that's when he first tried those sea prunes and hated them. So again, just lovely little
story, so
you know,
tight.
Calls back
story
to
so
these
tight.
Moments.
Yes.
So, so good. I don't feel like did we see any hybrid animals in here? It's not animal
we did,
heavy.
Actually.
We
no.
saw rats.
No
I think
animal.
The rats were just rats.
Straight up rats.
Regular.
They're just rats.
Just rats.
Water bent rats. Water bent rats.
And
them
blood
bats,
bent.
Them rats are water bent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very intense question for me to ask on top of everything else we've already talked about. So you don't have to answer it. But I was like, oh, we do have the director. Like, what hybrid animal episode? Like, what could we have created? Like, who would have made sense in this? I'm wondering if it's like a wolf, like, you know what I mean? Like, you'd have something in the forest, maybe something that kind of adds to the creepy element. Like, we just had a couple of super fans on the show not too long ago who said that they would create, one said they would create a wolf dragon, and then the other one said that she would create a spider snake. And we were both like,
wow,
geez, like, those are both like
very
super
scary.
Creepy. Yeah.
Very
spider
very
snake scary. Is creepy as heck. Yeah. I'm, you know, for some reason, because I know it's a very specific thing that she did to the rat. And I don't know why this isn't answering the question directly, but I do remember going forward to Korra, Tarlok ends up doing that to some wolves.
Yes.
The same technique.
Yes. It's chilling.
It is
dark
chilling.
Art. It's a dark art.
It's a dark
art. It's a dark art.
Dante wants none of it. He wants none of it.
It's too much power for one person. Too
That's
much
right.
power.
Yeah.
We can't trust all those bloodbenders out there. We can't trust them.
Yeah, but as far as like hybrid animals, geez, Alu. Something crossed with a bat is no good for me. A wolf, yeah. A wolf bat
alive.
Or something.
Scariest yeah. animal alive.
We could throw a wolf bat in there. We know wolf bats yeah. are around and about, yeah, and that would have been a perfect addition.
In the Philippines, there's a bat that's the size of a small Filipino man, and it has a head of head of a fox.
Dude. It has, it's literally adorable, though, right?
It's the size of a small Filipino man, and it has the head of a fox and the body of a bat. I mean, thank goodness it just eats fruits, but that thing is the scariest thing you'll ever see. You don't want to see that guy flying around you at night. That thing is scary.
You know what? You brought up Ice Pirates. There's another film from around that era called The Beastmaster.
Oh, Beastmaster. Don't even.
Well, there were those. Do you remember those upside down hanging dude, bat dudes that would like scoop people up and like eat them up? Yeah. There you go.
I hate bats. I hate bats. And I found out recently on a podcast that bats are the most mammals on the planet Earth. 20 or 25% of all mammals on Earth are bats.
Are bats?
I kind of like them.
What?
Wow.
But we have cute ones. We have cute ones in my neighborhood. They're darting around eating mosquitoes. And I'm on board.
See,
but I'm not talking about
the size of a Filipino man bat with the fox head.
I'm not talking about that.
Google it.
I'm talking about a cute one.
I feel like that's a Batman storyline. Like he's just got to empower them, and he's got like a whole army.
Orange. I love that you fox and the body of a bat.
It's terrible. I love that you're like it's not the size of a large child. It's the size of a small man. It does make it scarier. It does make it scarier. All right, let's talk about most valuable bending moment of the episode. Valuable. Now you see, we don't necessarily say like best, most heroic use. It's like, what's valuable about it?
It's
so we have had people.
Bending.
Yeah,
same
we've had
blood bending.
That's, I mean, right? I mean, we've seen, we've watched adversaries receive this honor from us because whether we like it or not, we're like, well, that was the most valuable bending. Like when Azula does XYZ, like that kind of has the
that
biggest cost or it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I see you, Dante. I feel like you're headed in the direction of Hama for sure.
It's definitely blood bending. It's definitely bloodbending. The great thing about this show and adversaries, you're talking villains, adversaries, is this show really explains the backstory. So it's not all good or evil. It's like even Hama, even Azula, it's like you get to see how they got there and you understand like the Fire Nation created their own demise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We make our own demons.
We make our own demons and we see how these people have got created and they're not all bad. It's a very gray world going on, and that's a beautiful part of Avatar, seeing these things.
Absolutely. Okay, all right, so Hama won it. Hama got it. What about most valuable non-bending?
I got to go
Sokka goes,
Ding.
Hama!
Guys, Hama, that one.
Hama. Yes, the innkeeper.
But we all knew at that point, so I don't know that it's
I knew from the first frame of Hama and her wrinkly lips in the forest. Get her some chapstick, this girl. For some reason, just gray. It's somewhere. Everything's gray. Her skin's gray. Her hair's gray. Her clothing scale. She's gray. Get away from Hama.
She definitely delivers one of the lines like midway through with like an air of like, uh-oh.
Mysterious town for mysterious children.
Ooh, that is creepy.
No. If someone said that to me, I'm not going anywhere with you. There's no way, no how. I have not seen a Hama cosplayer yet. Don't want to see it.
Don't think
show
I have
up
either.
At my table on some old Hama stuff because I'm not having it. I'm not having it.
But she does kind of have that anime, or like, not even anime, but like Japanese horror, like the mesh, like the sort of straggly hair and the kind
sort
of like,
Ringu.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Ringu, yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's
very
great.
Much so.
It's great.
I hate it.
Han Valley, but yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's got to be Ding. He's the one that gave him the clues.
That's
to
a
like,
good point.
Yeah,
how this all
it's
works.
Ding. It's Ding, and Ding didn't even know what's going on. They gave him just enough for them to kind of figure it out.
That's right.
I'll give it to old man Ding. I'm not scared. Absolutely.
He's a good dude. You know, he's boarding up the
Ding.
The
old man Ding. That's the other thing is, you know, I asked earlier, like, is she feeding these people? She did say she had to do some errands and let those guys run around the house. So I think those errands she did was getting a little water, a little food for her captives.
Oh, that's nice. She's feeding them?
Okay. Yeah. She's treating them
well. Mama's not the worst in the world. She just looks scary.
All right. Listen, I think there's something fun about, yeah, Ding survived her, which is also cool. Like, they're sort of counterparts to each other. He's an older gentleman. No offense. Yes. I'm so sorry, old man Ding, that you don't like being called old, but you are a bit of an older gentleman. So, yeah, totally give it up for that. Guys, wow. This was a lot. There was a lot to talk about. There was a lot for Dante to be extremely creeped out by.
Great episode.
Yeah, it's right great. On. It's great. It goes forward.
Well,
it goes backward.
A real pleasure.
Joaquin, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Thank you, guys. This is incredible. Super
you're the best.
Fun.
This was awesome. Such this was awesome. Time. Now watch out, because we will pull you back in.
Let's go. I'm ready.
In. Everybody, awesome, thank guys. You so much. Thank you for thank watching. You so much. And just be careful out there. You know what
see
I mean?
You next
and don't
week.
Bloodbend.
No bloodbend.
Don't bloodbend. Don't do it.
And
you
if you see
to.
A spooky old woman in the middle of the night, do not go home with her. Heck no.
Yeah. Don't do it.
All right, friends, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Avatar Braving the Elements. Now, want more Avatar? You can follow the official Avatar accounts at Avatar The Last Airbender on Instagram and Facebook. You can also follow the official Avatar Braving the Elements account on TikTok at Avatar Official Podcast.
Tell your fellow Avatar friends to listen, rate, and follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts.
This podcast is hosted by Janet Varney and Dante Bosco. The theme song was composed and produced by Jeremy Zuckerman. Audio production and editing was provided by Zeke Rodriguez-Thomas and MindJam Media. Avatar Braving the Elements was executive produced by Lynn Keston-Sessler, produced by Lisa Summerscale-Steeler with consulting producer Janet Varney, with production support from Kira Chow, and special thanks to Avatar Studios, Garrett Beltis, and Danielle Pretzfelder-Demchik. Trademark, copyright, and phone record, 2023 Viacom International Incorporated, all rights reserved. This has been a Nickelodeon original podcast.